In this hot flashback episode, I'm returning to Don't Be Duped, Misleading Marketing, and the FDA. It's the story of how the FDA came to be, including the disasters that were common before the FDA existed, and then what all those FDA categories actually mean, what it takes to get FDA approved, and why testosterone never was. I then get into the loopholes that are commonly used to get that reassuring FDA stamp of approval and other misleading labeling that makes worthless products fly off the shelf. And then my favorite topic, why your vaginal estrogen has that scary black box on every label that warns if you put a drop of estrogen on your vulva, you'll get dementia, blood clots, and breast cancer, even though none of that is true. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. Look, you grab a product off the shelf. Maybe it promises to help with bladder control, take off 10 pounds, erase your wrinkles, or boost orgasms. You assume it's going to do what it claims to do because it's got the FDA seal right there on the package. And the FDA seal is proof that a product is not only safe, but actually works. Right? Actually wrong. It's a surprise to most consumers that most over-the-counter products have not gone through any kind of testing to make sure their claims are legitimate. Look more closely at that reassuring blue FDA logo. There's a good chance it doesn't state that the product is FDA approved, but rather FDA cleared, listed, or registered. And FDA cleared is not even remotely the same thing as FDA approved. But before I explain all that, I'm going to take you back to the days before the FDA existed. I learned about the history of the FDA when I was preparing a lecture on the impact of estrogen on skin. And I discovered that at one time, it was common for over-the-counter face creams to contain estrogen to decrease wrinkles. In the 1950s, estrogen was the key ingredient in many over-the-counter face creams, which is why they work so well. Estrogen-laced face creams were not only marketed to older women to decrease wrinkles, but also to women in their 20s and 30s to prevent wrinkles. But that all came to an abrupt halt when the FDA got involved in 1962. More on that later. The original Food and Drugs Act was passed by Congress in 1906 and signed by Theodore Roosevelt. There was nothing stipulated about safety or efficacy of drugs and products. The initial law only required accurate labeling of what something contained. The purpose was to control interstate commerce of misbranded and adulterated foods, drinks, and drugs. It's actually not strange that there were no requirements to prove efficacy, since in the early 1900s, the concept of a clinical trial didn't exist. There were no studies in which people would take a new drug and compare it to people taking a placebo drug to prove that it worked and that it was safe. New drugs were simply released to the public by the manufacturer based on their claims that it would treat an illness or a condition. As far as testing, it was pretty random. It wasn't unusual for physicians to try a new drug on themselves first. There's even documentation of male doctors taking estrogen just to make sure nothing bad happened. No surprise, with minimal or haphazard testing prior to selling a new drug, bad things happened. In 1912, Mrs. Winslow's soothing syrup to calm teething babies worked really well and was extremely popular. Unfortunately, the active ingredients, morphine and alcohol, made it a little too soothing, resulting in the deaths of thousands of babies. Although things like heroin, alcohol, cocaine, morphine, or opium were widely included in over-the-counter medications, labeling at that time did not mention the presence of alcohol, heroin, cocaine, morphine, or opium. The Mrs. Winslow's soothing syrup disaster prompted the passage of the Shirley Amendment, which prohibited labeling medicines with intentionally false claims. Again, at this time, no testing or proof was required before release of a product. In 1937, another disaster occurred when a popular antibiotic, which in addition to sulfa contained diethylene glycol, otherwise known as antifreeze. That product killed over 100 people, including many children. And then there was the mascara that dissolved the corneas of and blinded hundreds of women. there are more. And it was those kinds of events that prompted the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938, which required new drugs to be approved prior to marketing. This was really the beginning of the modern FDA. There were two parts to this act. For one, for the first time, drugs had to be tested before they were brought to market in order to make sure they were safe. The second thing was that drugs had to be labeled with specific directions. I mean, we take for granted that when we get a prescription, it's going to tell you how much to take and how often to take it. But before 1938, those kinds of specific directions didn't exist. This was also the beginning of requiring a prescription for drugs. People could no longer just walk into the corner drugstore and request any medication they wanted. Notice I didn't say anything about a drug proving that it worked. At that point, FDA approval did not require that a drug be proved effective, only that it would not cause harm. It wasn't until 1962, not that long ago, that a drug had to prove that it worked to gain FDA approval. So back to the estrogen and face cream story. In 1938, when the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act was passed, it was unclear if hormone creams were in the drug category or the cosmetic category. So they were pretty much under the radar until 1949, when the FDA came out with a position statement about estrogen face creams that said they were, quote, skeptical of the ability of these creams to accomplish the results promised, but not in a position to disprove their claims. They went on to say, the FDA does not look favorably upon the distribution of these creams for lay use, but possess no conclusive evidence that harm had resulted from the use of creams containing the amounts of estrogens found in these creams then on the market. So they acknowledge that there is definite support for the anti-wrinkling effect produced by the use of hormone cosmetics based on thickening the epidermis, and plumping of the collagen fibers. They also stated that the anti-wrinkling action of hormone creams is more noticeable in older age groups. So in other words, the FDA acknowledged that they seemed to work, but they were disturbed by the lack of safety data. And as a result, in 1962, they decided to regulate the products by requiring that they had no more than 10,000 international units of estrogen, a number they picked randomly and way below what most creams contained. That and other regulations made the creams cost prohibitive to sell, and they disappeared from the market. But it wasn't until 1993 that estrogen in face cream was prohibited. By the way, since then, there have been over 23 placebo-controlled studies evaluating the impact of estrogen on the face, which demonstrate both safety and efficacy in postmenopause women. But today, there are still no FDA-approved estrogen creams to be applied to the face on the market. They can be gotten with a prescription from a compounding pharmacy, but I digress. So, cut to present day and what the various categories, FDA approved, FDA cleared, FDA listed, or FDA registered, mean, starting with FDA approved. FDA approved is by far the toughest category to be in and doesn't apply to most over-the-counter drugs. FDA approved prescription drugs and medical devices are products that are used to treat specific medical conditions. This is the important part. Treat specific medical conditions like migraine headaches or osteoporosis. And these products have to go through an incredibly arduous, long, and insanely expensive approval process to demonstrate not only that the product treats the specific medical condition, but also that the benefits outweigh the risks. The average time it takes for a drug to get to your pharmacy is 15 to 25 years and requires hundreds of millions of dollars for research, development, and trials. The FDA doesn't do the testing of these drugs. They simply review the testing process. That means the pharmaceutical company has to pay for all the research, development, and pre-FDA approval testing. And despite years of time and insane amounts of money, most drugs never make it to the gate, either because they've not been shown to be safe and effective, or the pharmaceutical company abandons it because it's just too costly and takes too long to do the required testing. Testosterone for women is a good example. Early trials of testosterone showed that it improved libido in postmenopause women and was safe. But when the FDA required additional long-term safety data that would have cost millions, the company decided it wasn't worth it and abandoned the product. I can promise you that testosterone for men did not require the same kind of testing. This required testing also explains why drugs are approved for treatment of a very specific condition. For example, local vaginal estrogen is approved for treatment of vaginal atrophy and painful intercourse. Even though every local vaginal estrogen also treats bladder symptoms, such as urinary urgency or recurrent urinary tract infections, it never went through FDA approval for these conditions, so the label doesn't reflect that, and they cannot advertise that. Your doctor can prescribe it for that purpose, a practice known as off-label prescribing, but the company can't mention the bladder benefits in any of its marketing materials. Ditto birth control. Birth control pills are only FDA approved to prevent pregnancy, even though they also get rid of period cramps, decrease heavy menstrual bleeding, and reduce rates of ovarian and uterine cancer. Why not get birth control pills approved for all of those other benefits? Because it would take years and millions of dollars to do so. And from the point of view of the pharmaceutical company, why go through all that trouble when doctors can legitimately prescribe them to treat whatever they want without the blessing of the FDA? Today, roughly 30% of birth control pills are prescribed for non-contraceptive purposes, all without FDA approval. Moving on to the next category, FDA cleared. Most of the over-the-counter products, as I mentioned, are not FDA approved. They are FDA cleared. Also, devices, as opposed to medications, are FDA cleared, not FDA approved. There are three classes of FDA clearance. Class one includes products that essentially have no risk and require no regulation. Think dental floss. Class two products require some clinical trial data to demonstrate safety and effectiveness. Condoms fall into this category. Class three is for devices that are for medical use, are potentially high risk, and are used only by physicians. A heart valve placed in surgery is a class three device, and like prescription drugs, require full FDA approval prior to being cleared for use. However, there's a loophole. Class two devices are eligible for FDA clearance if they're similar to a device that the FDA has already classified as FDA cleared, even if the new device is intended to be used for a different purpose, and even if the original device was approved many years ago. This rule was established so that a new brand of condoms didn't have to get its own FDA clearance since other condoms were already FDA cleared. It makes sense and is legitimately used to launch many products, but this loophole can be highly problematic. And the reason that an FDA cleared product is likely to be safe doesn't mean that it does what it claims to do. Case in point. At one time, Intimate Rose Dilator stated that they were the only vaginal dilator that was FDA cleared. Their website proudly displayed a large FDA logo. Very reassuring. Except when I went to the FDA site, the Intimate Rose FDA listing stated that their dilators were cervical dilators. Last time I checked, the vagina and the cervix were not even remotely the same thing. This was very clever on their part. They realized the only way to get that reassuring FDA clearance was to say that their product was similar to existing products. But the reason no other vaginal dilators were cleared was because they didn't need to be. It wasn't required. But Intimate Rose wanted to use the logo, so they went with cervical dilators, instruments that are FDA cleared. Cervical dilators, by the way, are metal instruments that are used in the operating room to dilate the cervix to gain access to the uterine cavity, like during a D&C. Vaginal dilators are used at home to treat conditions like vaginismus and painful intercourse by facilitating relaxation of pelvic floor muscles that surround the vagina. The FDA finally caught on to their misleading marketing, and as a result of that, in January 2024, changed the classification of all vaginal dilators to class 2 status, and vaginal dilators could no longer be sold over the counter without FDA clearance, a huge and very expensive barrier. The current workaround is that companies that sell vaginal dilators now need to call them vaginal trainers, whatever that means. But that's why you will see that term on products that are actually over-the-counter vaginal dilators. If you go to the Intimate Rose site now, even though they are properly FDA cleared, the phrase Intimate Rose Dilators is proud to be one of two companies with full FDA approval. They're not FDA approved. They're FDA cleared. Not the same thing. As long as we're on the topic, my go-to for vaginal trainers is SoulSource. Not only lovely products, but a family-owned business that donates thousands of trainers to nonprofit organizations, including global outreach to clinics in Africa that treat vaginal fistulas. These are really good people. So if your vagina needs a little training, buy SoulSource. So there's FDA approved, FDA cleared, and then we get to the third category, FDA registered or listed. The final category is the biggest problem, since it includes devices and drugs that make claims about wellness and fitness rather than treating a specific medical condition. Because there are no claims that it treats a medical problem, these products don't require a prescription and don't need to go through the FDA approval process. For example, a device that claims to tighten the pelvic floor but markets itself as treating urinary incontinence, a medical condition, would need to be FDA cleared. But if the exact same device claims to enhance intimacy, it only needs to be registered. So the type of device does not determine the FDA category. The claim that it makes determines the category. And this explains why so many products use meaningless, vague terms like enhancing intimacy, easing menopause symptoms, or my favorite, improving feminine hygiene. In the case of FDA-approved products, the FDA determines the language that the company uses and what the product label says to make sure it reflects what the FDA has approved it to be used for and to ensure that every single side effect is listed. And this is why when you see a prescription product advertised on TV, there's that long list of terrifying side effects. The FDA requires that the company specifically say those things. In the case of an FDA-registered or listed product, the company and not the FDA determine what language is used on the packaging and what the device claims to do. Since scientific studies aren't required, they're not performed. Why would a company spend millions of dollars on a study that might prove that their invention doesn't eliminate wrinkles, help your hair grow, or reduce hot flashes? Similarly, the FDA doesn't regulate vitamins, herbs, or dietary supplements, which is why so many products claim to simply promote health or boost your immune system as opposed to treating a specific illness. All those lotions and potions that are sold on websites that claim to reduce hot flashes, no testing required. One product that got nailed for making a medical claim was the Jade Egg, one of the many worthless products in Gwyneth Paltrow's lifestyle brand, Goop. The Jade Egg, when placed in the vagina, according to Goop, supposedly balanced hormones, increased bladder control, regulated menstrual cycles, and even helped prevent depression. No wonder this egg was a bestseller. Needless to say, the only thing a Jade Egg does is to deplete your bank account by about $66. After the California FDA dinged them for making false claims, Goop paid a paltry $145,000 in penalties, which is probably what Gwyneth spent on her last vacation. The site still sells Jade Eggs, and while no longer stating that this magic egg will balance your hormones and prevent depression, they do claim that the egg will, quote, harness the power of energy work, crystal healing, and a Kegel-like physical practice. Totally meaningless. The website no longer says it will help with sexual or bladder function, but simply that it will bring, quote, joy and well-being. Even though the unsubstantiated wellness claims are no longer there, it doesn't matter. Thousands of women still buy Jade Eggs, believing that it's going to do amazing things. And Gwyneth Paltrow is laughing all the way to the bank. While Jade Eggs are relatively harmless unless they happen to get stuck in your vagina, they're only one example of the thousands of products that line the pharmacy shelf and pop up in your browser, bombarding desperate people with promises. The FDA sent warning letters to multiple companies that were illegally selling products that claimed to prevent or cure Alzheimer's disease, stating these products may be ineffective, unsafe, and can prevent a person from seeking an appropriate diagnosis and treatment. Which brings me to Prevagen. Prevagen gets the award for one of the most convincing messages on TV, with claims that a daily dose will rapidly improve memory and support healthy brain function, sharper mind, clearer thinking. Wow, I could use some of that. And if I had any doubt about its efficacy, there are testimonials from countless older folks who attribute their current clear thinking and superlative cognitive ability to Prevagen. Except for one problem. There's no proof that Prevagen does anything it claims to do. The primary ingredient, Epoa aquarin, is a protein found in jellyfish. Epoaquorin has never been shown in any scientific study to have any impact on cognitive function in older folks. They liberally quote a small company-sponsored 2011 study that demonstrates improvement in brain function, except they left out a few minor details. The study, which was never published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal and never replicated, shows no statistically significant changes in any of the adults that took Prevagen outside of a small subgroup of, wait for it, healthy individuals with no cognitive impairment. Healthy individuals with no cognitive impairment. It's kind of like giving a diet supplement to a group of people who are not overweight and then saying the supplement helps to maintain a normal weight. In 2017, the New York State's attorney charged the makers of Prevagen with false advertising. The outcome of that lawsuit is still pending. Bottom line, take Prevagen and you'll be as smart as a jellyfish. Misleading, obviously. Confusing, you bet. And it doesn't help that many products will say they are FDA approved when in fact they are simply listed. So a healthy skepticism is appropriate. And when in doubt, a visit to the FDA website, which is completely public, is in order. And while we are on the topic of misleading labeling, phrases like clinically tested, or doctor recommended are completely meaningless. Doctor tested may mean nothing more than they paid a doctor to use their product on a few patients and the doctor said, no problems. Doctor recommended may mean nothing more than the company paid a doctor to recommend the product. Clinically proven? The phrase clinically proven does not indicate that the product underwent actual scientific studies. Clinically proven is usually based on marketing studies, meaning they gave their product for free to 20 women, had them use it for a few weeks, and then asked them if it worked. This is particularly popular when it comes to wrinkle creams and other products that lend themselves to before and after photos. It's amazing what a makeover, professionally applied makeup, and Photoshop can do. A real study would be a randomized controlled trial, or RCT. As an example, if you were to do an RCT for a wrinkle cream, you take 100 women, biopsy their skin prior to using the medication, then give half the women real wrinkle cream and the other half fake wrinkle cream without telling them if they're getting the real deal or the fake. You then do a post-treatment biopsy and have it evaluated by a dermatologist who also does not know which skin got the real cream and which got the fake cream. To be legitimate, the study needs to be evaluated by scientists that have nothing to do with the study, and then it needs to get published in a scientific journal. The marketing study costs no money, takes no time to do, and proves nothing, but makes for great clickbait. The real study costs tens of thousands of dollars and takes a year or more, and in many cases ultimately proves that the product doesn't work. Finally, under the umbrella of things worth knowing about FDA classifications is the concept of class labeling. This is a huge problem. Many drugs are affected by class labeling, but in my world, the most egregious example is in the case of the local vaginal estrogen creams, rings, tablets, and inserts. If you are someone who reads the fine print before you take a new medicine, the list of risks on your local estrogen product will convince you that it is not worth getting blood clots, cancer, and dementia just to get rid of vaginal dryness and have decent sex. But FDA class labeling requires all products with the same ingredient to have the same warning, even if the risk has never been demonstrated in that product. In other words, just because something is listed as a risk doesn't mean it is a risk. For example, taking oral systemic estrogens can increase the risk of developing a blood clot. That risk has never been demonstrated in the use of transdermal estrogen product. That risk has never been demonstrated in the use of a systemic transdermal estrogen patch, spray, or gel. That risk has never been demonstrated in any vaginal estrogen product. Yet it's right there on the label because the FDA requires that a blood clot warning be on every product that contains estrogen. Every single one of the warnings on vaginal estrogen labels is based on the risks associated with systemic oral estrogen. So that's my rant. The FDA is important and we need regulation to protect consumers from sleazy companies that want to sell you worthless products. The FDA just needs to do better. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and thank you for joining me. You will find lots more information in my Inside Information books available on Amazon.com. And follow Francie as she navigates her way through vaginal dryness, hot flashes, and pretty much every menopausal symptom you can think of.
Feeling.